previously on looking for the Tote family.
Anthony has cooperated with the investigation and he has confessed to killing his wife, Megan.
I know that he valued this family. He was so in love with Megan.
And their three children.
He loved his children so much. We can't, none of us can believe that ever
happened.
It doesn't
match at all.
She was like, that's not the Tony Toe I knew.
Just a very nice kid. One of those people that everybody was friends with. He got along very well with everyone.
He was a physical therapist and he touched so many of us and so many of the kids in town.
His business was sponsoring fundraisers and coat drives and just very involved in the community.
Honestly, to see him and to know him, you wouldn't think that there would be a mean bone in his body whatsoever.
He devoted his whole life to helping people, right out of college to the medical profession.
From the day in New London, Connecticut, I'm Sten Spinella.
And I'm Taylor Hartz.
And this is Looking for the Tote Family. Many of Tony Tote's friends and relatives told us they were blindsided by the allegations that he had confessed to killing his wife and kids.
Everyone described the Totes as the perfect, loving, all-American family and couldn't believe what they were seeing on the news.
Tony always portrayed the image of a devoted father and husband in his home life. But at work, things were slipping.
We took a look at his businesses and dove into his legal and financial troubles to see if his professional life would show us a different side of the story.
He was very close and friendly with all of his employees.
Randy Gallagher had worked for Tony at Family Physical Therapy for years.
He was willing to help us out if we needed anything personally. I remember one time our toilet was leaking at our house and I put on Facebook that, you know, I needed somebody like a plumber or whatever. I didn't know what the issue was. And he messaged me back saying, I can come over and help you. So, you know, it's just that he was a very helpful, friendly person.
We heard rave reviews about Tony's work as a physical therapist. His patients told us that he had a magic touch when it came to healing them, in a bedside manner that made everyone eager to come back for their next visit.
It was weird how every single person we talked to who had experience with him as a physical therapist used some variation of the term magical or extraordinary or, you know, incredible, that he was able to not only fix their kids and make them feel like they had a shot at getting healthy, but also make them feel welcome and make them want to come to the office.
He was very friendly and made the patients feel like, you know, really comfortable. And he just was very knowledgeable in physical therapy. He would look at one person and they would have gone to several other people to get a diagnosis. And he would be with them for less than 5 minutes and he would know what was going on.
Parents told us that they would take their kids to therapist after therapist all across the state, and no one would be able to figure out why their child's back hurt or why their ankle wasn't healing correctly. And then they would go see Tony, and they'd be fixed. They'd be walking again, and they would finally be pain-free.
My son had a lot of knee issues.
Linda Ackerman was another person who told us that Tony was this magical physical therapist.
He's the one that diagnosed him with I always forget how to say this, Osgood-Swager's disease. And no other doctor had picked that up, because we have other friends that have had that situation, and we've known some people that have had to have surgery. You know, and my son is right in the middle of a pretty extensive sports. But Tony was able to work with him, taped him, monitored him. And then when we did see other orthopedic doctors, they all praised over the improvements that my son made, and that it was good that he recognized it very early on. And like I said, I think my son went there for something different, and just from how he was walking and how he just noticed, like I said, picked it up from just his gait, and then did an exam, and then worked with us along the way so that we didn't have to have the surgery.
We heard a similar story back in episode 1 from Dawn Barden.
Her joints come out of their sockets. Like, she could lift up a backpack and her radius bone and talus, it comes out. It's just like your foot is just like totally hanging.
For years, Dawn struggled to find someone who could help her daughter, Courtney. But then they found Tony.
We were at 1, 2, 3 different therapists over the past 4 years, and nobody. I basically, when we'd gotten recommended, of course, we didn't have any high hopes because we had already been to so many therapists already for her. And he was just like, I could fix this. I could help you with that. He's like, oh, that's easy. How would this feel? And she was just able to walk in straight, be straight. He'd be able to tell which bones were out of place by looking at her. You know, sometimes he would just adjust her back and then have her go in the tank.
We heard that Tony was pretty innovative, investing in new technology like an underwater treadmill for hydrotherapy.
It's like a tank kind of thing. You would like get in, it would shut the door, it would fill up, and it would have a treadmill in it.
Courtney told us that using this underwater treadmill made her treatment a lot less painful for her.
When you would do physical therapy online, it would hurt more. So the water would just take the gravity away, so it wouldn't like be as hard on my muscles and joints.
Tony, as far as helping, was very knowledgeable. He helped her with so much relieving of the joint pain. I mean, he was there even when on emergency visits, we could just call the office and say, hey, you know, even if he was flying out back home, because he'd fly to Florida on Fridays, and be to the office in 15, 20 minutes, and he'd meet you there on a Friday morning. He showed me how to fix her on the weekends, like when we have horse shows, how to fix her Achilles and put it back, her talus bone, and put it back together so she can actually walk without as much pain. Otherwise, she'd just be sitting there not doing anything except for crying because she's in so much pain. So he helped tremendously.
A lot of people, especially parents, told us that Tony's personality and rapport with his patients was really remarkable.
He was really good at making you feel better. We heard that he was funny. He was always trying to make jokes. I don't know if he was actually funny. The way it was told to us, it sounds like he was good-natured, kind of corny, and made a lot of dad jokes.
A lot of parents told us that just like their kids didn't like going to the dentist or to the doctor, they normally didn't like going to physical therapy, unless it was with Tony. A lot of Tony's younger patients thought of him as a friend or as a cool adult that they could talk to, and would actually ask their parents when they could go see him again.
We asked people if they noticed something different about Tony in the months leading up to his arrest. If he was behaving differently, if he was agitated, anything like that. The most common thread that people gave us is that he had gained a noticeable amount of weight.
Did you notice a change in Tony when you first started seeing him versus the past 6 months?
No, only that he was gaining weight. Which, you know, we talked about it because I'm actually doing a weight loss surgery, and he's like, yeah, I should do it, but you know, the flying isn't helping me, which is true. If you fly, you retain more water when you're flying, and he was flying. Sometimes he'd fly out more and then stay over the weekend.
The family moved to Florida full-time in 2017. Tony tended to his physical therapy offices in Connecticut and flew back and forth every week from Connecticut to Florida to visit his family.
He was gaining a little weight, but he didn't affect just how he worked, and
his attitude was always the same. Cheery.
Yeah, always. Always. Always laughing, always smiling.
He was gaining quite a bit of weight.
Randy had noticed some changes in Tony's appearance and behavior.
Obviously not eating healthy, not sleeping. We knew he was under a lot of stress.
Linda mentioned that the last time she spoke to Tony, he seemed more stressed out than usual. She said that he was kind of running around his office from patient to patient during one of her last visits. That attentive focus that he was famous for was gone.
I had seen him early morning. My son had, I can't remember what the injury was, but he was like, oh, I'll see you, you know, first thing. And I was talking to him then, and he had gained substantial weight, looked pretty tired. And even during the appointment, he was very distracted. And I asked him if he was okay. And he didn't really answer me at first. And he just was like, it's just, he had kind of made a reference that it's all just getting to him. Like it was all like he was tired. And you know, that's when I said, I really don't want to see you go, but this has got to be very difficult. And He had made a comment that, that he works till, 9, 10 o'clock at night, doing reports, you know, or, you know, filling out the records. He's up at 7-8 o'clock in the morning, just eating on the run. And it was just all, and I just remember thinking, I just didn't want to tell him what to do, but I just was like, you know, this is just getting too much.
Distracted, always on his phone, even while he was treating patients. Just, he was quiet a lot of times if he wasn't normally that way. He was always kind of friendly and talkative.
He had gotten the water treadmill, and that was a very big expense. And I know that was one of the, I remember saying to him, like, you know, why do you have to keep working so many hours? He's like, I have to pay for, you know, this whole new system that he got.
You know, I know that it was like a mortgage payment, because it was probably like $100,000 or something, the machine itself.
He just kept saying to me, you really, this will work wonders for you. You really should work on it. You know, try it out.
In November of 2019, just before Thanksgiving, Dawn suddenly couldn't get a hold of Tony to schedule Courtney's next appointment.
On that Thursday before Thanksgiving, we had gotten a call from the office saying that Tony had a medical emergency. He was going to be not back, so we'll see you next week. You know, and I was like, okay. And then that Tuesday morning, I think it was, maybe it was Monday, we got a phone call that said Tony's still not going to be back, so we have to cancel.
Dawn knew about Tony's schedule flying back and forth from Florida, so a cancellation here and there wasn't surprising. But this time she felt like she was getting the runaround every time she called the office to reschedule.
The week of Christmas, on that Monday, when Charlotte called again, and I was like, well, I have to do something. You know, I have to find somebody to help her, because I can't do this anymore. She's not able to walk. And that's when she had said to, maybe you should find another therapist.
Dawn said that someone from Tony's office named Charlotte told her to call back in the new year. But when she did, the number had been disconnected.
It just didn't make sense. It wasn't working. And I was like, I'm sure I'm dialing it the right way. You know, and then I called the other number and I left messages upon messages upon messages. I never got a phone call back.
While patients were left in the dark until rumors started circulating on Facebook in December, Tony's employees knew that something was wrong when FBI agents showed up at their office on November 21st.
It was a Thursday. I know that because I worked early on Thursdays, early till late. It was like my long day.
Randy told us about the day she realized that nothing was going to be the same for her or her colleagues at Family Physical Therapy.
So I got there about 8 o'clock, I think it was. And Tony was not, like, I couldn't find him. But the other girl that was at the desk told me he was in a meeting. That's all she said. She didn't let on that there was anything wrong. And so in about like a half hour after I got there, a guy came out of the room and walked into my little office thing. And he said, showed me his badge. And he said, I'm from the FBI.
All of our information about the investigation into Tony's business practices comes from an affidavit made public on January 15th of 2020. The FBI and the Department of Health and Human Services had started investigating Tony and his business practices in April of 2019. In August, agents conducted surveillance of Family Physical Therapy's offices in Colchester, and in November, agents obtained a search warrant. On November 21st, they executed the warrant, seizing electronic devices, paper records, and patient files. This is what Randy walked into when she showed up for work that day.
I was like, oh. And then I started to get, you know, nervous and stuff. He's like, you've done nothing wrong. You don't have to worry about anything. It's all, you know, we're just investigating him.
During an interview with investigators that day, Tony admitted to illegal business practices and claimed full responsibility, saying that neither his employees nor his family knew what he was doing.
I have a feeling that she didn't know any of the financial stuff.
Megan and the kids were well liked by the staff, but it was rare for them to come by the office.
Since they moved to Florida, maybe once a year, maybe twice. But she was the sweetest, nicest, quiet voice, calm person that you can meet. And she was just loved her kids, homeschooled her kids. Her kids were so well behaved, so polite. They would ask when they came to the office if they stayed for any length of time. The boys would ask if there was anything they could do to help me. I mean, yeah, they were amazing.
Tony had allegedly been committing healthcare fraud for years by billing Medicaid and private insurance companies for services he never provided. On the day that agents came to the office to confront Tony, Randy only saw him very briefly.
I forget why, but they asked me to go into the room that Tony was in and ask him something. And for, I can't remember what it was, but I was like, I don't want to go in there. I did not want to see his face. So I went in and I asked him whatever question it was. I don't remember. And just the look on his face, like he just looked like a dejected little child, you know, like I've never seen him look like that before. So I knew right then that, you know, there he was in deep trouble for something.
The investigation cites six instances of demonstrable healthcare fraud based on the accounts of cooperating witnesses. For example, one patient, identified as Child 2, stopped receiving care from Tony in October of 2017. But over the next 7 months, Family Physical Therapy billed Medicaid for 55 fictional appointments. He also billed Cigna private insurance for many of those same appointments. All told, Medicaid and Cigna paid Tony almost $10,000 for services that the patient didn't receive. In another instance, a patient, identified as Cooperating Witness 5, said she did not receive any treatment from Family Physical Therapy in 2016, 2018, or 2019. But Tony and his office billed Medicaid for 178 dates in those years, amounting to about $21,000.
So then it just proceeded from there. More agents came, took all kinds of pictures of all the computers, had like little numbers next to all the computers. It was like, you know, on a TV show or whatever. And then about, I don't know, a couple hours later, they said, oh, they did interview me and the other girl that was there.
What did they ask you during that interview?
If I knew that he went to, over the summer, if he went to on vacation to Tennessee and to all these other places, if I knew the family, if I knew certain patients, they asked if he was into drugs, if he drank. Just a bunch of personal stuff. If he, if we've ever not gotten paid for any length of time.
What was your answer to that one at that point?
I said sometimes.
Randy said Tony's bad faith business practices extended to his employees.
Years back, we had to turn in our W-2 several times because they were wrong. So we knew he was, you know, something was going on.
The affidavit also accuses Tony of sending out numerous bills for service on Saturdays, despite Family Physical Therapy being closed on Saturdays. Multiple witnesses and travel records confirm Tony and his family had moved to Florida about 2 years prior to 2019. He flew back and forth between Connecticut and Florida every week and worked in Connecticut on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So it's highly possible he wasn't even in the state on a lot of those Saturdays.
The only communication that I got from him was a text about 5 o'clock that day. Everything's fine. It's just a, I probably still have the text. It's just a billing issue with Medicaid. Everything will be straightened out. Don't worry about it.
It appears Tony committed healthcare fraud because of his financial problems. He had been in debt. He was getting short-term loans to keep up with his debts. He would lie about how often he treated patients to make more money, and then use money obtained through these falsified claims from Medicaid, Medicare, other health insurance programs to pay off his loans.
He wasn't a very good business person, and he, he got himself in such a hole because of the fact that they moved. They moved, and he bought this huge, or rented this huge house, which I have no idea how they even got approved for that. And then he just kept getting lines of credit to, you know, try to rob Peter to pay Paul, kind of thing. That it was just like a cycle, and he just got himself in there and he couldn't get out.
The federal investigation found that Tony's businesses had taken out loans or cash advances from more than 20 different commercial lenders. In the month of August 2017 alone, Tony paid more than $99,000 from his business bank account to companies with names like Quick Fix Capital, Biz Advance Now, and Cabbage Inc. Before the affidavit was made public, we found that in 2019, he settled a $455,502 debt to a creditor called AKF Inc. with a payment of approximately $265,000. This is a cycle dating back several years where he would take out short-term loans or cash advances from these creditors, and they had the power to go into his bank account and take out payments when they needed it.
I would say the last 2 years have been, we've seen a lot of, we knew that he was going through a lot of stress. Flying back and forth twice a week, gaining weight, staying in his office till 2-3 in the morning, sleeping in his office sometimes. So we just thought, he has a lot of paperwork. You know, he never gets to do it at home because he's with his family. So it was just living a double life, and you can't do that for any length of time.
The affidavit paints a picture of someone trying to keep their head above water, trying to keep up with these debts. Why else engage in such a bold fraud scheme? It also paints a picture of a liar. Somebody who would take money that wasn't his, defraud the government and insurance companies in order to meet his debts, all the while presenting himself as an honest, good person. The affidavit depicted him as desperate, reckless, somebody keeping up with appearances while barely keeping things together.
I just feel that he's not the person that we knew. He changed. Something happened. Something made him become mentally unstable. That's my opinion.
Here's a telling quote from the affidavit. When questioned as to the motivation for committing this fraudulent scheme, Totes stated that he started borrowing money from lenders because it was easier. Totes stated that he kept having to bill for services that were not rendered to keep pace with the personal loans he took out. When asked if he was living above his means, Totes replied, "That's the best way to put it."
According to property records, the Totes bought their condo on Longview Drive in Celebration in 2005. It's just a few blocks away from the house they ended up renting on Reserve Place. Their condo was on the second floor in a complex that stands out on the street. It's a big, bright pink building, the color of a flamingo, with a lush garden and an extravagant fountain in the center of the lawn. When we visited the condo, there was a lockbox on the door.
Sten, this is my colleague Taylor.
Hi.
We're from a newspaper in Connecticut.
We tried to talk to some neighbors, but no one wanted to speak to us on the record.
Would you be willing to speak with me about your neighbors, the Totes family?
Most people didn't want to speak to us at all. Apparently, a woman down the hall from the Totes had spoken to the media early on in the investigation, and she had kind of been blackballed in the condo community. The woman ended up having to move away, and now no one wanted to talk about the Totes. We knocked on every door on their floor, and almost everyone closed the door in our faces when we said why we were there. One neighbor, an elderly woman at the end of the hall, reluctantly invited us in, but she wouldn't tell us her name. She cautioned us about what had happened to her neighbor after she talked to a reporter. All she told us was that the Totes hadn't been living in the condo for quite a while. She said that every once in a while she would see Megan and the kids in the elevator and notice how polite the kids were. She said the boys would always offer to carry her bags. From what she could tell, their condo was mostly being used by family members who were visiting Florida from time to time. We learned from public records that in 2017, Tony and Megan refinanced their condo through Bank of America with a $220,000 mortgage. That same year, they sold their home in Connecticut, a large gray and blue house down a long wooded drive in Colchester, for $348,000. We were never able to figure out where Tony was living while he worked in Connecticut after they sold that house, though one employee told us he may have been sleeping in his office. In May of 2019, they started renting a home in Celebration that was a lot bigger than their condo. Just a few streets away, the white house with black shutters is nestled between neighbors across from a park on Reserve Place. It has 5 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms, an in-law apartment above the garage, and a fenced-in yard with a pool. Their rent for the house was $4,900 a month. In January, a woman named Yasmin Dordoy, who was the Totes landlord for the Reserve Place house, posted a notice of eviction on their front door. Tony and Megan hadn't been paying their rent. A judge later ruled that Tony owes Dordoy $14,965 in unpaid rent. That eviction notice was never taken off their door. It hung there as if no one had gone in or out of the home to even notice it. When Dordoy saw that the notice was still on the door days later, she called police, asking for a wellness check. She told the dispatcher that she hadn't seen her tenants since Halloween. Her phone call to police didn't get her any answers, but the very next day, Dordoy learned of what had happened in the house she owned.
Information about the killings of a Colchester family at their home in Celebration, Florida.
4 people found dead in Celebration, Florida, and 1 person in custody.
Colchester family found murdered in their home in Florida.
Florida deputies are now focusing on a home where a Colchester family of 5 was being evicted.
The home on Reserve Place sat vacant for months as police concluded their investigation. When Sten and I went to Florida in March, their furniture was still on the porch. By the 3rd day of our visit, it had all been removed. The boys' basketball hoop was still set up out back, and a makeshift memorial covered the ground near a tree in the park across the street, with teddy bears, flowers, and photos of Megan holding her kids close. There were no photos of Tony.
Hi, good morning. Happy Tuesday.
This in August of 2020, a company called Orlando Estate Sale Ladies announced an estate sale on their Facebook page. It was for the Tote family, and it was held right inside the house where they were murdered, where their lives stood still and their belongings sat untouched for months after their bodies were finally found.
Come on in and see what we have for sale this weekend.
A woman from the company did a walkthrough of the home on Facebook Live.
So in this house, we're only doing the downstairs.
Upstairs was the bedroom where Megan, Alec, Tyler, Zoe, and Breezy had laid dead for weeks.
2 beautiful suede gray rockers.
The walkthrough starts in a room at the front of the house, beautifully furnished with chairs and a sofa from Ethan Allen. There's a piano and a piano bench, presumably where Alec and Tyler had their piano lessons, and a music stand with 2 small benches below it. There's a set of bongo drums on the coffee table.
Beautiful suede sofa.
Down the hall, there's a room filled with games and books. All the children's toys and hobbies had been piled up on a dining room table for display, waiting to be bought by someone new.
Here we have trucks.
There was a big, fluffy pink unicorn, a Minnie Mouse doll, and stacks of board games like Candyland and Clue.
A lot of fun things for the little ones.
In the kitchen, a chandelier dangles over one counter that's covered with crystal glasses. Another is stacked with stainless steel KitchenAid cookware.
The homeowner loved to cook.
In the garage, past the pool in the yard where the kids used to play, were more piles of the Totes' belongings, cheerfully described by the seller. Golf clubs, a brand new generator, holiday decorations, tools, and Zoe's car seat and stroller.
All right, so that kind of gives you an overview of what we'll be selling this weekend. Hope to see you in Celebration Friday and Saturday. Have a great week.
The Totes' home was eventually put up for rent after sitting empty for months. The silence reminding neighbors of the laughter that used to float over the fence from their backyard. Dordoy sold the home to a new owner in April. It was listed for rent in September for only $3,000 a month. According to real estate websites, it was rented out by someone sometime in October. There was no disclosure on any of the rental websites about what had happened in there.
Soon after the search of his offices, Tony told federal agents that he would get a lawyer before meeting with them. He told them he was going to Florida, but would be back in Connecticut on December 8th. According to the affidavit, he had also told employees he'd be returning for work at the end of 2019. Neither of those things happened. Agents didn't hear from Tony or a lawyer in December, so they reached out to a relative who's unnamed in the affidavit on January 7th. She told them that she had also been looking for Tony and the family and hadn't heard from them for a while. She said that he had told her he'd be back in Connecticut to address his legal problems on different dates, but he never came back. So, on January 7th, an agent went to one of Tony's physical therapy offices and found a notice to quit on the door. It was served by the state marshal the day before because Tony hadn't paid the $6,290 in December rent on the property. So, with no recourse, having not heard from a lawyer, having not heard from Tony, with his family not knowing where he is, to try and apprehend Tony, federal agents went to his address in Florida.
Police in Florida have not officially identified the four people found
dead. Todd is under arrest charged with premeditated murder.
He's being held in Florida in prison without bail.
On the same day Todd was arrested in Florida for the murder of his family, the U.S. attorney here in Connecticut tells me that he was also arrested for healthcare fraud.
Tony had also stopped paying employees, some of whom had stopped coming to work.
Yes, I'm going through that now.
Randy told us that she had filed a wage recovery complaint with the Connecticut Department of Labor and that she wasn't alone in doing that.
When I filed, I had to fill out a wage investigation / audit form because my quarters weren't reported properly, so I wasn't getting hardly any money from unemployment. So they filed it for me, so I haven't heard the results yet.
I reached out to the Department of Labor, and they did tell me that their Division of Wage and Workplace Standards had received 8 wage claims from employees and former employees of Family Physical Therapy. These were filed between December 23rd, 2019 and January 21st, 2020, alleging failure to pay wages and issuing bad checks. I filed an FOI request to try and figure out the exact number of how much money they were seeking and lost wages. The Department of Labor did not comply with the request because they said the investigations were ongoing. We checked back in with Randy in December. And while she had not been able to get what she was owed in back wages or even the full amount of unemployment that she's entitled to, she did tell us that she had found a job at another physical therapy practice.
So it's full time and it's, you know, things are so much different than how they were where I used to work. Everything is so much more professional and everything's by the book and, yeah, it's just, yeah, totally. I see why things were bad there.
The last time Randy heard from Tony was on Thanksgiving Day of 2019.
By text, Thanksgiving Day.
What did he say to you on Thanksgiving Day, if it's okay?
I said, Happy Thanksgiving. He replied, Happy Turkey Day.
She quit her job soon after.
Well, I only lasted until December 10th. Because my check bounced and I texted him and told him that I would be no longer working because I didn't want to work free.
Tony had told investigators and his staff that he would be returning to Connecticut, but Randy said she didn't believe it.
Well, I knew once that happened.
Oh, once the search of the offices happened?
Yeah, I kind of knew that that was the end. I kind of knew that we were never going to see him again once he left for that week of Thanksgiving. Everybody else kept saying, oh no, he'll be back. But I just had this feeling that he wasn't going to come back.
These secret financial troubles were the first indication that the Totes were not living the perfect life, and they raised a lot of questions. Why did Tony need the loans in the first place? Was there a connection between the fraud and the murders? The affidavit devotes most of 36 pages to detailing what Tony did to commit fraud, but the only explanation of why was Tony's terse admission that he was living beyond his means. Were the loans needed to cover the costs of running multiple physical therapy offices with expensive aquatherapy equipment? Was it the two homes in Celebration? The weekly round-trip flights between Florida and Connecticut? The estate sale video gives us a brief window into Tony's life at home, but the affidavit doesn't tell us much about Tony's personal finances, so we're left to connect the dots ourselves. The fraud investigation is completely separate from the murder investigation, and police and prosecutors have not said anything to the press about a motive for the killings. So we're left to wonder, did Tony's debt and his likely impending arrest somehow lead to the murders? In the next episode, we uncover another dark secret in Tony's life.
If it has something to do with what he saw as a young man in that house.
He walks into his mother's bedroom and he sees her bleeding profusely.
Tony started to have emotional problems.
He had to be traumatized, and it might explain why he did what he did, although it can never justify it.
If you or someone you know is in crisis, help is available. Call Mental Health America's crisis hotline at 1-800-273-TALK. If you haven't already, please subscribe to Looking for the Tote Family on your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to rate the show. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Looking for the Tote Family is hosted and reported by Taylor Hartz and Sten Spinella. Produced by Peter Huapi and Carlos Fearhen. Written by Taylor Hartz, Sten Spinella, and Peter Huapi. Editing by Peter Huapi and music by Carlos Fearhen. Television audio courtesy of WTNH News 8. Tim Cotter is our executive editor. And Izaskun Larnieta is our managing editor. Social media management by interns Josette Moses and Allison O'Donnell. This has been a production of The Day in New London, Connecticut.